Does anybody have any questions? I'll be tomorrow. I'm going to Oxford to give a 10-day retreat. So I leave the Vihara in charge of Venerable Viradhamma. For those going to the retreat, bring awareness to any anticipations you may be experiencing, anxieties, expectations. These are the things we learn from. When one conceives a 10-day meditation retreat, one doesn't know what to expect. The imagination can go crazy. Some people will dwell on 10 days of agony or 10 days of nirvana. And if you see these things as just conceptual proliferation, you'll not be bothered by any of it. Some people go to a 10-day retreat with the hope of attaining Satori, that they read about in some Zen book. Or maybe you think you're the kind of person that doesn't attain Satori. All the things, if you have a negative attitude, you're one of those that, no matter how hard you try, seem to fail. These are conceptual proliferations. The idea of emptying out the mind is to keep aware of the things that come and go. Like a mirror, the mind is like a mirror. All you have to do is look at it and you can see all the reflections of things coming and going without getting attached to any of them. They're only shadows, only reflections in a mirror. You can see them, their shapes, their forms, colors. Strange and interesting or uninteresting, conventional or unconventional. The silent witness, the silent watcher, just is aware of that which is changing now. People suffer a great deal because they're always anticipating something, expecting something, fearing something. These kind of vague feeling that one can be attached to without really knowing it, bring awareness to it. Fear, for example, something that we tend to want to get away from as quickly as possible or find a way to conquer it. And fear has that ability to frighten us. That's what it feels successful if it's done that. And we, out of ignorance, out of our habits and inclinations, tend to run or jump or scream when the fear rears its ugly head into our lives. Some people live their lives with a vague terror or fear pursuing them wherever they go. And at least they feel this. They have this idea in their mind that something's following them. And how many novels and stories have been written about this terror? But it also is only a conceptual proliferation. Great voluminous, profound and deep, complex novels have been written over nothing but soap bubbles and foam on the sea. One creates a universe in complex way through fear, ignorance, expectation, hope. All these things are complexities. Guilt, remorse. But when one sees them with wisdom, aware of their characteristics of impermanency, that they're very superficial and of no importance, unsatisfactory, and they're not me, they're not mine, they don't belong to anybody, then one is really becoming a deep, profound, and wise person. Or one is not becoming one, but being one. Or if you try to create illusions around your fantasies, fears, expectations, hopes, ideals, worries, building yourself into a being of deep moving complexities and great sensitivities, then of course you've got to suffer the result of being a very complex, neurotic, and unappreciated, miserable being. Dualism, such as shallow and deep. And we think, we don't want to be a shallow person, we want to be a deep one. Stupid and intelligent. We don't want to be considered stupid, we want to be considered intelligent. Refined, of course. We like to be identified with refinement. We don't like to think of ourselves as a coarse or crude being. On and on like this. Building our hopes, our expectations of ourselves into that which is desirable and attractive, and then fearing that we might be the opposite. As the opposites appear and disappear, refinement comes and goes, crudeness comes and goes, shallowness and deepness, stupidity and intelligence. The wise man just knows their presence when they're there and when they're not there. One doesn't have to identify with profundity or deepness or shallowness or goodness or badness. Cutting through identity, stopping the attachment to the changing condition, is indeed wisdom. in your practice, any opinion that you may have about it, yourself, or meditation, or Buddhism, or Christianity, if you just see opinion as impermanent condition that arises and passes away, then you're indeed a wise one. However, if you spend your time opinionating, speculating, doubting, intellectualizing about religion, meditation, about society and politics, economics, you're just caught in the cycle of being stupid and intelligent, shallow and deep, coarse and refined. And then you'll be all the time caught up in these changing conditions, glad at your refinement, miserable at your crudeness. So when one no longer involves oneself in this cycle of birth and death, then it's like standing and watching it all. Standing at, looking at the mirror and seeing the changing conditions that are reflected in it, without thinking those changing conditions are yours or you. So reflect on this. Sometimes it's very helpful to think in or use simile like the mirror, watching the reflections that change, the light, the dark, the red, the blue, the coarse, the refined, rather than using these kind of symbols to contemplate your mind with. The host and the guest, the one who knows, and all the guests that come and visit and go away. That which comes and goes is a guest, that which changes and doesn't stay. Awareness is always there to know their presence and their absence. The guests don't know. All they do is follow their habits of being born and dying, coming and going. These are called upaya, or skillful means. One can use one's intelligence to develop skillful means in one's practice. When we eat our meal, every day we bhikkhus eat only one meal. We look at the food, experiment with food. How does food affect you when you eat a meal? Contemplate the plate, the food on it. Stop and look at food as an object to sight, rather than just blindly following one's eating habits. Sometimes eating is done very compulsively or greedily, way of kind of indulging one's self. And instead of doing this, break the habit, just blindly indulging or following habits, and break the habits you have, interfere, reflect on, look at. When you're looking at a plate full of food, it's an object of sight. See it as an object, the colors, the shape. What does it do to you? Do you feel hungry, or do you know? The attraction, the aversion, pleasure that you're expecting to get from it, or the aversion you may have to it. Just observe these things as they appear in your consciousness as a way of meditating on food. One's eating food, there's always a lot of greed and a lot of aversion involved. contemplate what happens to the food after you put it in your mouth. Ajahn Chah used to suggest that taking a mouthful of food, chewing it, and then spitting it out in your hand and looking at it, and then putting it back in your mouth. And there's a reflection for monks. One is on food. And once the food comes in contact with this body, it becomes repulsive. After one has chewed the food, then spits it out and looks at it, one doesn't want to eat it again. And yet it's mixed with your own, with the fluids of from your own body. Why is this? This aversion to the body, the repulsiveness? Not aversion, repulsiveness. Or attraction and beauty. See, these things as they appear, changing conditions. There's nothing that's permanently beautiful or permanently repulsive. If one is, say, overly attached to being physically attractive, vain, full of lust, sexual desire, then it's a good practice to dwell on the repulsiveness of the body. Because people that are obsessed with sexuality see themselves and others as attractive, desirable. And to break this habit, to see in another way, is to contemplate the body as repulsive. See it, the ugliness of it, rather than dwelling on its attractiveness. And you'll see a lot. This is not to be morbid about the body, but contemplating it in different ways helps to understand it. Because there's that which is attractive and that which is repulsive. And these conditions vary, arise and then pass away. This is another upaya or skillful means for dealing with lust. If you already feel aversion and disgust for your body, then you need to practice this. It would come too easy. I know people that hate their bodies and think of them as repulsive and disgusting like to do this practice. Kind of an indulgence. But if you're already convinced that the body is gross, ugly, and disgusting, then you needn't pursue the subject any further. Then the practice of metta, or acceptance of the way it is, rather than dwelling on its repulsiveness or the aversions you may feel in regards to yourself, the body, or your mind, your emotions, the metta, or acceptance, kindness, non-aversion to the body, to the conditions of the mind. And this is another upaya, or skillful means. People of very critical, averse nature, need to develop this practice of metta, acceptance, being non-critical, non-averse to that which you have, that which you experience. Metta is that kind of kindness, acceptance, letting things be as they are without reacting with aversion. If you are the kind of person that is terribly fussy and gets upset at disorder or inefficiency, then learn your practice is one of relaxation and acceptance, rather than trying to develop, be very disciplined and precise and efficient. You've already developed that. You already have the skills in being efficient. Learn to be more inefficient. Relax. Because this is another upaya to counterbalance an extreme tendency. Or if you're very lazy, very lacking in energy, in discipline, and just a drifter, learn to develop a more disciplined life. Be more resolute in your practice. Do things or surround yourself, put yourself in situations where discipline is needed, is necessary, is demanded, to see what happens. This is another upaya, or skillful means. But to do these things, you have to know where you're at to begin with, and this is what we're doing here. Where are we at? Where am I at right now? And then you start from there. What's going on right now? It's through these mindful, aware skills, developing skill in awareness, knowing the imperfections, the imbalances that you have, the conditions that arise in the present. Sometimes one has to be aggressive, sometimes passive, and it all depends on time and place and one's particular character, and this you can only do for yourself. You have to trust your own wisdom. Teacher can only kind of point in a general direction, and then the student must do the work, must go in that direction to find out what is to find out in that direction. And the Buddha is always pointing at you. Look at yourself. This Buddha Rupa, this image on this shrine, is not saying, look at me, I'm a Buddha Rupa. He's saying, reminding you to reflect on the Buddha inside, the wise one, the undeluded one. And you conceive the Buddha as being within, but then you know that's a conception. So you're beginning to be the Buddha by knowing conception, the limitations, the characteristics of conception, perception, consciousness, feeling in the body.
Upatipanno bhagavato sāvaka-saṅgho